From the shores of Puget Sound, this is Greener Views, a unique media resource for information, education, consultation, and fun. Greener Views is a part of the Healthy Homecast Network and is brought to you exclusively by HealthyPainting.com and AmbrosiaDigitalMedia.com. Each episode will introduce and connect you with services, products, practices, organizations, and groups that focus on the health, happiness, safety, well-being, charity, and community of all. Find us on the web at www.greenerviews.net. And now, your host, Daryl Whalen.
Good evening and welcome to episode 46 of Greener Views. Hey, I'm Daryl Whalen along with Randy Parcell and Michael Schwartz. They're both back together in the house. Joining us this evening is Larry Swanson from Office Fitness and officefitness.org.
That's right.
And we'll have to talk about how you got the org thing. Greener Views is part of the Healthy Homecast Network, healthyhomecast.com. It's brought to you exclusively by healthypainting.com and ambrosiadigitalmedia.com. So if you'd like to advertise or be a sponsor or donate, please contact us at 206-650-4587 or email us at info@greenerviews.net. So we get started by talking about how I know the guest, and I really, well, I kind of know you a little bit. We had a nice lunch over there in downtown. We met through the, what was it, the lunch brunch thing?
The Green Drinks Noon Hat Lunch.
The Noon Hat Lunch, yes. And for those of us, why don't you start by just giving us a real brief thing about what Green Drinks is. I know that you're not here as a representative, but I say you knew the guy.
Yeah, so Gabriel, actually it's funny because I know Gabriel way before he started the Green Drinks.
I've been
drinks
trying to get him on here for since we started this 2 years ago, but I never could. I don't know how to get a hold of him.
So Green Drinks is a networking event for people with interest in green culture and green business. And I go just for the networking part of it because I know Gabriel and a lot of other people who go. And one of the adjuncts to it is that lunch thing that they have it, I think it's
once a month?
Once a month, the second Tuesday of the month, I think. And then the following Friday after that, they do the lunch thing that we participated in. And that's how we met. It's back there.
Yeah, and we sat, and the other guy that we had lunch with, the bicycle rider.
Robert?
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to say.
Yeah, he wants to come on the show as well.
Excellent.
But, we sat down and talked and found out that I think the one thing about Green Drinks that's really cool is it's pretty accommodating to the type of stuff and the type of guests that we have on our show. From what I know, they do all the great it's kind of a portal for all the events and activities in the Seattle area.
I think so. That's where I find out about a lot of stuff.
Great. Mm-hmm. And so we sat and we talked about your business and the things that you want to do and the things that you've been doing and the things that you're working on, and we'll get into that in the show. Mm-hmm. So thanks for joining us. Why don't you start out, give us a brief elevator pitch. What is Office Fitness?
So Office Fitness is the idea that you have to stay fit at work, fit for work, have ergonomic self-awareness, and work on your posture, as I'm doing right now.
Every time we have
we'll take you to task on that all throughout the show. It arose out of my massage practice. I've been doing massage in downtown Seattle for about 10 years now. And I started to see this pattern, what I call tragically predictable pattern of postural stuff and the pain that goes with these postural distortions that originate from desk work. So that's how it started, was through as an outgrowth of my massage practice. So about 5 years ago, I began researching how to help people with their posture, how to advance my massage practice to help people. And throughout that time period, was when all of this research about the hazards of sitting and sedentary behavior came to light. And so I was like, whoa, this is even more important than I first thought. That there's basically the upshot of all that research is that it shows that regardless of how fit you are outside of work, regardless of how active you are outside of work, if you sit at a desk all day, you're going to die earlier. And that was a wake-up call for me in my personal desk behavior. And it was sort of an impetus to add and focus or hone my approach to the what I call office fitness. So it's evolved to this point to where I have what I call my three pillars of office fitness. Starts with exercise because you have, number one, thank you, you have to exercise. We just have to be more routinely active at work. It's killing us to not be. And two, exercise you can do to counteract the postural things. For example, there's this tendency to slump forward. You do exercises on the back to pull your shoulders back up. So there's exercise. That's the first pillar. The second pillar is ergonomics. And regardless of how well supported you are in that regard, like a lot of companies will come in and do an ergonomics assessment for you and otherwise help you get set up and buy you fancy equipment and desks and things. Even if you have that kind of support, and a lot of people don't, but even if you do have that kind of support, I would argue that you need to cultivate ergonomic self-awareness and self-knowledge and sort of self-assessment skills. So that's one of the big areas I'm developing right now. So ergonomics is the second pillar. The third pillar is posture, that your interface with the computer through that ergonomic setup affects your posture. And all these things are related. The ergonomics affects the posture. You can undo the posture with exercise. It's all tied in. So exercise, ergonomics, and posture. And then there's other things that are unique, not unique, but troublesome to people who sit at a desk all day. Nutrition being a key one, the lure of the donut, all the crappy junk food in the break room. That's a hazard. And then there's just what I call sleep hygiene, this area of both getting a good night's sleep. And I talk a lot. I have this intake form in my massage practice. And one of the choices of all the conditions that are currently affecting you is sleep problems. Everybody checks that one. So sleep is a huge issue in our culture. And helping people to work on what I call their sleep hygiene, just helping them get a setup that better supports a good night's sleep. I'm also a big fan of napping. Now, I'm not going to take that on as a crusade. Not something I'm going to be able to sell to corporate America real soon, but I do it. I'm lucky enough to have a setup that supports it in my work life, so I nap almost every day. So sleep and napping are an important part of it. And then stress management. You know, there's nothing more stressful than sitting in a desk job all day and having demands on you. And so stress management. And then there's other kinds of self-care, you know, self-massage and other kinds of first aid, little things you can do with your vision. And again, all these things tie back to those three pillars. Like the vision often goes with posture. If you're peering forward because your bad eyesight is bad, that affects your posture. And so it's all related. And then there's the need to get, so there's the self-care part of it, all those things that we're just talking about. Then there's also, sometimes you just need help. You need professional care. And so I'm also working on content about just how to know when you need help, when you need, an optometrist or a podiatrist or a massage therapist or a chiropractor, whatever you might need. So that's kind of the scope of it. That's not a good elevator pitch. That was a lot of information there, but that's what I'm up to.
Well, who was it that said, as long as we're going on an elevator ride up about 100 floors?
Right. That was the new,
No, well, there's a lot of great stuff there. I mean, that's really got me going. And I can tell you that when we met over there for lunch, that was the beginning. There is exactly what caught me, because I've had some, like you said, they've been talking about this stuff a lot. And I have just been having some conversations with a very good friend of mine about this very thing. And what she said was, if we don't get up and move like every few hours and really do some kind of activity that, and if we do regular exercise and athletic stuff on top of it, that stuff's actually like negated.
It is.
That's a pretty intense and hardcore statement, but that's what she claims.
I don't know if negated is the exact right word, but it is clear that that doesn't undo it, that you can't make up for a full day of sitting by going out and exercising like a fiend at night. We need to. In fact, I just reread an article that came out several years ago in Time magazine about why exercise doesn't necessarily help you lose weight. And one of the insights, there's a whole bunch of other stuff in that article, but one of the insights in that article was that exercise promotes your appetite. So you tend to eat more when you exercise. You might be in better shape, but you're going to be heavier as well. But part of the insight out of that was that we used to be more routinely active. We used to have, even in desk jobs, if you're using a manual typewriter and running down the hall to the steno pool or whatever people used to do, you know, that was a much more thing. The advances in ergonomics and technology have us just in these like little spaceship cubicles typing away and producing away with very few opportunities for movement. So I think I'm actually optimistic about this, that I think there's been this 30-year trend. The IBM PC was introduced about 30 years ago. That's sort of where I mark the beginning of this problem. And now I hope that within the next 30 years, we can come down from or come up out of this pit we've dug ourselves into and figure out ways to incorporate more movement.
Well, the computer will probably be going away in the next few years, so that'll be helpful.
Well, I don't know. It's funny. One of the things about computers is that I think it's the problem. It's got, you know, the mouse and all that stuff. It's got us into this problem to a large extent. But computing technology, like if you think about the Kinect controller and the ability to wave, you know, to interface with the computer. And there's a new gadget called the Leap Motion, which is even more great. To use the Kinect, you really have to do big, broad movements. This Leap Motion gizmo, you can just wiggle your fingers a little bit to interface. So I'm hopeful that kind of technology will lead to different interfaces so that you're not just leaning over a keyboard and operating a mouse.
Well, they've been doing it. I mean, the technology is changing, like you say. I mean, they've been doing it with all the fancy video games that are interactive and physical. There's a friend of mine that his wife does a yoga type of a thing off of the kids' like Wii game or something.
Exactly.
And so if there's a way to introduce that into like the actual computing and the office stuff, that would be kind of an interesting.
No, that's a great, and you know, this kind of gets at one of the biggest things about this area for me. I call it office fitness.
Yeah.
And I think it's a term that resonates with people. They kind of get it when you talk about it. And there's going to be huge numbers of gadgets exactly like that. People will take the Wii platform or the Kinect or the Xbox or whatever it is and figure out a way to do a productive, you know, you get a yoga teacher designing something like that or a Pilates instructor or a chiropractor, you know, anybody who has, and there will be many different perspectives to it. So I kind of hope that those technology platforms will launch a whole new genre of, like you're saying, like the Wii or something like that. Wii Office.
Yeah, know, why not? Yeah. You know, something's got to be done. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's really, especially here, you know, where we record our show here in Seattle area, and being such a techie kind of a place, I mean, I think it's probably pretty apropos to the entire planet at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But first of all, we have a lot of people developing and a lot of these companies developing a lot of this stuff all the time. But at the same time, we have probably so many people that are just sitting around in their offices on their computer and stuff. I'm a painting contractor, which is a pretty physical job. Mm-hmm. But I have to tell you, I spend a tremendously large amount of time when I'm not working doing stuff on my computer.
That's right. I think everybody does, regardless.
And it's not just watching the Taiwanese guy that does the funky dancing either. It's actually doing business stuff.
I'm sure it is. Yeah. Nothing but business. Yeah. Just like me. But you're right. I think we're all stuck with it now.
Yeah.
This talk now, it's so pervasive that, and in fact, I haven't done a huge amount with it yet, but part of my editorial plan is to develop things, content about, for example, smartphone ergonomics. We don't really think about that. You see people on the bus all the time kind of curled up over their smartphone. That's not good for you. It's just as bad as sitting
It's not smart. Phone.
It's not smart. Yeah, the dumb phone. similarly, just any situation, the iPad, again, people are using those all the time. And we are quick to adopt these things, but I think we're a little slower to figure out how to do them in a healthy, sustainable way. This is where I think, you know, people, I work out of the hub, you know, this co-working space. It's all about sustainable businesses.
Yeah.
And sometimes people go, office fitness, how is that? And I'm like, there's nothing.
It's probably applicable to every single person that's in that building.
Exactly. There's nothing less sustainable than an unhealthy workforce. That's my.
Well, we got to get it to the point where in like the movie Lawnmower Man that came out like decades ago, where it's extremely physical. He's in this gyroscope and he's exercising everything and he's doing all this interactive computer type of stuff. So we can just figure out a way to like incorporate that into everybody's jobs and businesses. I know Randy would like that, huh?
Yeah. I'll put that in my Netflix queue because I haven't seen that.
Yeah. We generate our own electricity.
We generate our own electricity and also are also exercising.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. You know, I hadn't stitched this together until just now, but I've been to a few green events. Like there was a performance, musical performance in Cal Anderson Park up on Capitol Hill, and the amplifiers were powered by audience members riding bicycles.
Yeah. There was a band that traveled around on bicycles, mm-hmm. and their amps were.
Well, that's one of the ways. You know, there are emerging already gadgets and gizmos to permit more movement at work. For example, there's one of the crazier new ones is the bicycle desk, where you're sitting on a bike pedaling away with the desk platform in front of you. Less kind of kooky. I mean, that'll probably take off. That'll be a thing. I guarantee you.
It seems kooky now, but there's a day where like, oh, just to think, one day we thought this was kooky, and it would be like, you don't have a bicycle desk? What's up
with
that?
Exactly. Why are you sitting there?
Yeah.
Well, that's one of my vision of this whole thing. Do you ever watch Mad Men?
No, I don't watch television.
Anyhow, you don't even have to watch it to get this because it's set about 30, 40 years
ago. It's like
ago.
In the 50s or 60s.
The
isn't
early
it?
60s, yeah, mid yeah. 60s, and everybody smokes and everybody drinks like fish. And you look at that show, and part of your reaction is like, holy crap, I can't believe we used to behave like that.
Yeah.
And my hope is that in 30 years, we look back at all this sitting and sedentary behavior and go, oh my God, what were we thinking?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, could you imagine if you went into work and you came to your office and they unplugged your thing and then they gave you a bicycle and said, hey, if you want to work here, you've got to like operate, you know, the energy.
I bet we'll see that. You know, I don't know of any programs that exist yet. In fact, I just joined SHRM, the local Society for Human Resource Management.
Ah, okay.
So I'll be networking and hanging out with those people and learning more about that. But you're going to see it. I guarantee it.
Yeah.
You're already seeing standing desks are really prevalent in a lot of companies now. Treadmill desks. Do you know about these?
Nah.
Where you have – so you have just a treadmill. The guy – let me backtrack a little bit from that because it's interesting how the treadmill desk came to exist. All this research on sitting and sedentary behavior led to the coining of a term called NEAT. Non-exercise activity thermogenesis, which this guy, I know. I didn't make it up. I can't take credit for it. Guy James Levine at the Mayo Clinic came up with that. And so he was the guy, I think, who originally came up with this idea like, holy cow, we got to get moving more. Mm. So his first idea was like, okay, how can I get people moving? So he invented the treadmill desk, which is just a work surface kind of out in front of you. And you're walking on a treadmill. It's non-exercise, you know, so non-exercise activity thermogenesis, NEAT is the acronym. So it's not an exercise pace. You're just walking at 1 mile an hour.
Yeah, but it's still enough.
It's enough because if you think about the hazards, so the hazards of sitting, when you sit, there's all this bad stuff that happens.
Yeah.
Your legs are sometimes called the second heart.
Yeah, interesting.
And they have a real important role in the circulatory system.
Hmm.
That's turned off as soon as you sit down. There's also all this other physiological stuff. Your ability to metabolize sugars and fats and stuff changes. You're pre-diabetic after 30 minutes of sitting. I mean, that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but not a huge exaggeration. So even just a little bit of movement like that, a non-exercise level of movement is enough to begin to counteract the hazards of sitting all day.
No, that's amazing. You got something?
Michael. Cafe Ladro down in Fremont, they now have a big stand table.
That's
big. That fits about 8-12 people.
Yeah, that's my favorite coffee shop. I haven't been there in about 2 months, though, so it's pretty new. Oh, excellent. Now it's even more my favorite place.
Yeah. There you go. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. At least you get your legs and stuff.
Exactly. So even standing. And in fact, there was some research. This goes way back, like 50 years. I think it was in England. They compared the incidence of heart disease between trolley conductors and trolley drivers, and the drivers had twice the rate of heart disease
because they're sitting and the other guys are standing.
The conductors are standing up.
Interesting,
and moving around all
day.
So that was one of the early sedentary incidents.
And then you add poor diets, and you add not getting enough sleep or the right kind of sleep on top of it.
Yep.
So yeah, let's get into a little bit more. So we're shifting the intensity of the show over the next several months and stuff, and so we want to really get into the heart and soul of this.
Okay.
Tell us about how. Let's talk about a little. You've gave us a lot of great information, but how dire is this? The sitting around and not exercising and stuff.
Well, a recent headline in the BBC's website said, quoted a doctor as saying, sitting and sedentary behaviors are as deadly as smoking.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Now, we got to qualify that because many more people sit than smoke.
Yeah.
But it's still a serious problem. You know, you look at the incidence, for example, just here's a few random data points. American Cancer Society last year or the year before blamed 90,000 new cases of cancer on sitting and sedentary behaviors. There's other research that shows that if you sit, this research compared people who sat 3 hours or less a day with people who sat 6 hours or more. The people who sat 6 hours or more were, men were 20% more likely, women 40% more likely to die during the 14-year course of this experiment. You know, so it's like serious. You know, and there's lots of, you know, like I said, in hearkening back to that old thing. So there's lots of data. It's serious. It's deadly serious.
Oh, I believe it. Yeah. I mean, you think about, I'm 51. I mean, I'm older, but I mean, the world and life has been around for quite a bit longer than that, I gather. And just in the period of time, I grew up in the Midwest, and activity, I mean, there was a lot of bad habits and stuff, too. I mean, there's always, as we advance in some ways, we, you know, de-evolve in other ways. But just the general, you know, the general type of jobs that we had and the general type of activity and stuff that we had on a daily basis seemed to be a lot higher. And it seems to be, as we get comfortable as technology, it seems like we're getting...
Yeah, I don't know that anybody has measured that per se, but you're exactly right.
Yeah.
And there's everybody who does this research talks about that, that just our lifestyles. Think about the soccer moms hauling the kids around in their van. It starts early.
Yeah.
You know, the kids are carted around. I rode my bike or walked everywhere when I was a kid. And I was raised in the Midwest and Virginia, kind of the East Coast and the Midwest. So... it's changed remarkably, but I don't know, you know, there's been a lot of research on how bad sedentary behavior is, but I don't know if there's been a lot of research on the specific behavior change. And that's, which is interesting because my goal, and you know, this, like I said, this is a huge problem. I'm not going to be the guy that single-handedly solves it, but I want to be aware of what's going on and help this thing. But it's a serious, huge public health thing, you know, along the lines of 40 years ago when smoking became known as such a horrible thing, all these things happened to help reduce the incidence of smoking.
Yeah.
I think that we're in a similar place where over the next 20, 30 years, you're going to see all kinds of activities designed to like mitigate the sedentary behaviors.
Well, even, you know, we were talking about before we got rolling about, you know, I've been a vegan for a little over a year now, and I don't have the healthiest diet. I kind of go back and forth, but I can tell you one thing. That in the time that I've been around in the last 50 years, the in some ways, there's a lot of, like, we were just talking about this morning, how there's a lot more natural food markets and stuff, and when we were kids and stuff, there was nothing like that, and I think that people are getting aware and open to like ideas and stuff that we would never talking about, and. There's nothing to get me to believe that the whole thing about the sedentary lifestyle and everything. It would be fantastic.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, again, I don't know the data on like the exact amounts of food that people are eating.
Yeah.
But I think 30, 40, 50 years ago, I think there's a lot more processed food now.
Yeah, and that's an understatement.
You know, and all the salt and sugar and high glycemic index crap and that. That alone is a huge problem, I think. And so much of that has to do with, again, convenience.
Yeah. You know,
we think that's interesting. There's this trade-off between convenience and mortality, you know.
Yeah. For everything.
I'm sure the first guy to get an office job was like, oh, this is sweet. Yeah. I'm inside. You know, there's no tractors crushing me. There's no molten metal to come out of some machinery. There's no, you know, it looked great. On paper. And then, you know, all of a sudden, 20 years later, you're dying of heart disease. You're right, though, that your point that there's been a huge amount of change over the last 30, 40 years. Not all of it, you know, much of it going in good directions, like you're saying, this increased awareness. But I think the amount of junk food being sold is not going down as much as we'd like.
Well, that's a whole nother issue. Yeah. I mean, I guess for us and Greener Views and the things that you're doing, it's a matter of us keeping on top of it. I'm inspired by the amount of knowledge and information that you have and the way you can communicate it. So thank you for doing that. Yeah. So It's kind of a silly question, but, you know, I'd ask about who your target clientele is. We pretty much know, but what is the – let's ask about the typical – or not typical, but the average kind of a person that, that comes into your office. How do they find you? How do they find out about you? Who are they? What do they do?
Well, it's interesting. You know, so that's – from that perspective right now, we're talking about people seeking out massage. And people get massage for all kinds of reasons. But just – because I'm downtown, probably 60, 70, 80% of my people spend a lot of time at their desk.
Yeah.
So I see I see that's kind of a baseline almost for my practice. And so I see almost, I don't know, there's like five complaints that people have. Pain between their shoulder blades, pain in their neck, pain, you know, tingling and nerves stuff in their arms, low back pain. All of those things are can be caused and or exacerbated by desk work. So that's sort of my interface with the world. And that's, again, that goes back to the very beginning of this. That's where this all started, was my, like, what the heck? What's going on here? And how can I help these? And how can I help them more than – I've developed massage routines that really help people. But that's like one person at a time, which I'm happy to do. But I would – the underlying part of this whole thing is like, how can I extend this knowledge and share these discoveries more widely than like – four or five people a day in my massage room.
Yeah. So when you, I imagine that you spend a lot of time once you do meet with people, say initially they come in and they're just kind of thinking about or talking about massage, then you come and I would assume, judging from the kind of person you automatically become this educator.
Yes.
And they start finding out that, wow, this is a, there's a, it's a bigger picture here. It's not necessarily what I thought that, that was going on, or not even necessarily why I thought I was coming in here. Is that so?
That's exactly right. And in fact, from the very first day of my massage practice 14 years ago, about I've always had, and I didn't even know what I meant by this at the start, but I've had this thing called body awareness as sort of, I want to help people become more embodied and in themselves and conscious and aware. And all of these problems that come from desk work give me a great opportunity to educate people and kind of tell them stories about how their body got to where it is and let them write their own stories about how to get out of the problem. And so that's, like you said, I have, as you notice, I have a ton of information to share.
Yeah.
And right now, the other thing I'm trying to do is become a better storyteller, to try to figure out how to better tell these stories, because it's such an effective way to get people to change their behavior. I've been doing a lot of reading, probably more reading lately on behavior change and behavior modification than on any, you know, health subject or anything, because that's the fundamental aim of this.
And it's all, and it's all interrelated. It's the body, it's the mind, it's the spirit, it's the...
Exactly, yeah. And you're right. And it all does go together. And it's real gratifying. I have seen, and so I've seen that at the small, you know, one person at a time level. I see people come back going, yeah, you're right. I think about it all the time. I look around the office and I'm like, ooh, what, look at that. Yeah. In fact, that's a lot of, in fact, if any of your viewers have any ideas about this, one of my current ideas, I would love to figure out a way that doesn't violate people's privacy to like bust people for having bad posture at work, you know, to have like
the posture police,
the posture. Yeah. I like that. I might steal that name, but that's
just giving you a warning ticket. We're not going to be taking you in.
I like that little siren on your hat or something. Yeah. So anyhow, so I'm constantly thinking about ways to take this from the individual level and take it out to,
you got to think of something on the click it or ticket thing, you know.
Click it or ticket.
Hey, you know, they could probably do it with the camera recognizing.
Exactly. And you're a video guy, Michael.
Yeah. So you can invade everybody's privacy, and then you can meet with them after work and you say, look at how you're standing and sitting, man.
And then blur their face. I know they have, the Google has that technology in their street maps.
Yeah,
they can
automatically
blur faces to protect privacy. So I really think that could help a lot of people. And it's kind of, and it can be fun too.
Yeah.
But you gotta be respectful of people too. You can't humiliate people into change. You need to make it in some way fun and engaging.
So, yeah, you're a great guy to talk to. I think we could easily go way over our time, so let's try to get into some of this stuff. But, no, you're doing great. I love talking to you. The one thing I wanted to say is when I first spoke with you, something had came up, and we were chatting about this, and Robert, I think, was talking to us, too, about it was when I grew up in Ohio and I moved out to Seattle 10 years ago, and this was before I was even in corporate. I don't even think – I barely even had a computer before I moved out here. But the one thing that I was hearing about was some of the big tech companies were offering these opportunities for people to take breaks from their day and to go out and do physical activities and, mm-hmm. and play games and everything. And, of course, where I grew up, people thought that was like kind of hippy-dippy. But now I understand that to be really, really important.
Mm-hmm. And you're right. That's been around for a long time. So one of my not very well-kept secrets is that I used to be a juggler. When I first moved here 25 years ago, that's what I did. And I learned through that that like that's what guys at Microsoft do on their lunch hour and their breaks is they go out and they juggle in the on the lawn there. So there is – you're right. There is a tradition of this. And the, you know, like foosball at Google and all these – I don't know how widespread that is though and how well – well distributed throughout the day it is, because the you know the science seems pretty clear that we need to be moving like pretty much all the time,
yeah.
or most of the time, or much of the time anyway. And even if you take like two breaks a day, that's probably not enough to counteract these effects. But you're right. I think there's maybe more of a culture here in Seattle that would. This might be a good place to start this,
yeah.
you know, because you're right. There's already a sort of an ethos and an infrastructure in place that supports that. So I'll let you know. I'm just getting into that world. When you asked earlier about my audience,
yeah.
I'm actually debating with that a little bit right now. I'm always relentlessly focused on the poor schmuck at the desk. That's
yeah.
all of us. You know, that's my focus. But in terms of distribution of, you know, reaching those people, am I going to do it with my website? Am I going to do it with YouTube videos? Or am I going to go into corporate HR departments and try to convince them to let me talk to their people? And so that kind of gets at that issue.
Well,
like
might,
how institutionalized is this willingness to get people moving at work?
Yeah. Well, I think regardless of whatever you decide, if you came into each and every office opportunity while juggling, I think it's going to open up a lot of opportunity for you.
I'm a reformed juggler.
Yeah. I love juggling. I haven't done it in a long time. I think if everybody in the world juggled a couple times a day, it probably would be a better planet.
I think that's – yeah. I would agree with that.
So what are the alternatives to sitting in an office environment?
Well, we've hit on a couple of them, but there's – so one thing I need to find a graphic artist to help me portray this. So if you just think about all the ways that human beings can be in the world, lying down, sitting, squatting, standing, there's this. So anyhow, I don't know how practical like a squatting desk would be, but squatting is a very common behavior in like Asia and a lot of Africa and other places around the world. It turns out to be a very healthy sort of engagement of the body. I don't know how practical that's going to be, but just between sitting and standing, for example, sitting, it's not the end of the world if you
yeah.
sit for some stretch of the day, but if you can break it up, there's sort of a halfway between sitting and standing. There's a position called perching where your thighs, instead of being like at 90 degrees like mine are right now,
yeah.
they're more open to like 135 degrees, which is a much healthier position. And there are chairs called variously called saddle stools, perching stools. That are kind of like a half bicycle seat, half bar stool that puts you up with your legs bent a little bit. So you need obviously an adjustable height desk
yeah.
to make that work. But so go from sitting to that position, you're in good shape. Standing up is great. There's problems with standing. There's, you know, there's a much older literature about the problems of standing and how to deal with it though. And there's all kinds of gadgets out there, little pads to put your feet on, to soften the surface you're standing on. If you elevate one foot a little bit when you're standing, that can help kind of – I don't understand exactly biomechanically what's going on, but it makes it much more comfortable to stand for long periods of time.
Hmm.
One of my favorite illustrations I've found as I've done the research on this is a medieval library in Europe where there's a guy standing at a counter with one foot up. So this is not new information. It's been around for a long time. So you can go from sitting to halfway up to perching and then up to standing and then get moving. You know, the treadmill desk that we talked about before, the bicycle desk. And it doesn't have to be – there's this great – if you go to Pinterest and or just go to my website and look for bicycle desk, you'll see this picture of a guy, really cool-looking, homemade, handcrafted wooden desk just in front of his bicycle. So he's – I'm not sure exactly – how, you know, the leaning over part and still being able to work a computer, how that would work. But there are also just little little pedal things you can put under your desk just to keep your feet moving a little bit, even while you're sitting. There's also, I've seen a recumbent bicycle desk and an elliptical desk. So you imagine a physical activity and there's somebody, like I said, this problem is well known now.
Yeah.
If you can imagine a physical activity and a gadget that promotes it, I guarantee you that somebody's hooked a desk up to it by this point.
Well, there's how many billions of people on the planet? Somebody right now is likely coming up with some funky
exactly.
things.
Yeah. And that's what I'm trying to do with the website. I want to be there was a great article on NPR yesterday about the misuse of the word curator, about how – and that's a thing on the web now that you curate content.
Yeah.
And that's how I was thinking about it. I think I need a better word now because that curator had good points about why that's a dumb idea. But anyhow, I want to be a repository for that kind of information as these things arise to point people back to them. So
yeah. So, I mean, language is important, but I think the use of the word curator is probably not one of our biggest problems.
Exactly. I'm kind of pedantic that way. Sorry.
So is there like a national resource for the type of thing that you're talking about? Like, let's say somebody that we know, of course, people in Seattle are going to come to Office Fitness downtown.
Mm-hmm.
But what about somebody else that's listening to us somewhere on the other end of the country or somewhere else? Is there?
I think there's a whole
Is there like a infrastructure movement or something?
Well,
there's been
for years in bigger corporations, in any place that's big enough to have an HR department.
Yeah.
They'll probably have some kind of a workplace wellness program. And those are all over the map. They can be anywhere from like EAPs, employee assistance programs that help people with healthcare advice and things like that. Or it can be incentive programs. If you quit smoking, we'll lop $20 off your health insurance premiums. And incentives to gym discounts and all kinds of things like that. So those kinds of programs exist. And I think just anecdotally, I haven't had time to go out and do a huge amount of research, but just talking to people, the random conversations I've had, everybody says, oh yeah, my HR department, they're on that. We've got, you can get a standing desk if you fill out this form or you'll get a discount on your gym membership, or yes, they encourage walking meetings. Oh, and yes, there's a lot of other things you can do to routinely, besides just your desk setup. You can do things like walk around when you have a meeting, walk down the hall to talk to a colleague, take the stairs, park at the far end of the parking lot, get off the bus a few stops early. There's lots of little things you can do to add more movement into your day.
Mm.
And so, HR departments get this, and there's various kinds of programs, almost always under that workplace wellness umbrella. So in that sense, yes, there is stuff. And I don't know. I just kind of made this term up, office fitness. It just sort of fit what I was doing. And I don't know if it's going to take off. Maybe there'll be something other way that people identify this. But to me, it makes sense. It's like,
well, it's on Greenerviews. Of course it's going
to
take
exactly.
off.
Exactly. So it has to, this is the place where you codify your business name. So that's it. We're set. It's office fitness.
Yeah. So, I think that you're saying in a lot of companies, there's a lot of space for this and a lot of people are likely to be a lot more open to it. We become so acclimated to our life, sedentary or not. And unless we ask, unless we know something's going on, then nothing's going to change.
Exactly. And that's the big thing is something's got to change.
Something's
got to
give.
I used to smoke years ago.
That's me too. I got about a little over 8 years without a cigarette.
You get the information, you go, oh, that's horrible. And yet you still do it. And then there's this long kind of time lag between the information and then all these, I had many different attempts to quit and different approaches and different kinds of information. So I don't know if there's a natural process in any kind of major behavior change like that. Maybe it'll be easier because of the smoking cessation research or what Weight Watchers have learned about weight loss. Maybe it's going to be easier for people to get out of these sedentary behaviors because of these earlier programs. But my hunch is that there's just some natural human inertia, that just keeps you going on this sedentary path. And it'll be a little bit of work to get out of it, like as it was for me to quit smoking.
So. Well, we've got about 20, 25 minutes left in the podcast. Maybe we can get into the inner workings of the brain and like flush all this stuff out.
Okay.
let's see. before we take a break and get into the next session, section of the podcast of the program, why don't you just give us one simple thing that could potentially make the most impact for anybody out there that has this kinds of stuff going on that's in the office environment?
Well, I think if you could take, say you sit, say you have a job where you go in at 8, go home at 5. If you're working and you're at your desk about 7 or 8 hours a day, if you could get up every, if you could spend 20 minutes of every hour, even just standing up, if you can figure out every time the phone rings, instead of sitting there to answer the phone, stand up to answer the phone call. Any opportunity there is to stand up, make a standing desk. You can, my standing desk is an archive file box, you know, $4 at Home Depot or at Office Depot. Set it on top of my desk. It just happens to work out to be the right height for me. Yeah. That's a whole other thing is ergonomics.
Finding the
is,
right height.
Yeah, ergonomics is really important. But for me, it just happens to work out perfect for my height.
Yeah.
And so that's what I would say. Just figure out a way to stand for a third of the time that you would normally be at your desk. Again, there's the research is really clear on the hazards of sitting all the time. And almost all of the research articles end with like, we can't say for sure, but it just makes sense that if you get up and move regularly, you know, like 5 or 10 minutes every hour, I'm like, eh, let's be on the safe side. Let's say 20 minutes every hour.
Yeah.
If you can spend a third of each hour where you'd normally be at your desk, standing up, walking around, doing something else, that's the one thing I would say is just figure out a way to begin to get moving. Yeah. Standing up is a great start.
It's really not rocket science.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's, I think, the history and the evolution of the human has proven that being very active and being very mobile and stuff like that is a lot likely to be a lot healthier for us.
Exactly.
Great. Well, we're going to take a break, and we're back in a few minutes or whatever, however long it takes that silly song that we love so much to go through. And we'll be here with more of Episode 46 and Larry Swanson and Office Fitness.
You are listening to Greener Views.
Gravity connects me to the earth, which connects me to people who connect me to myself more honestly. And gravity connects me to the crust, which connects to the leaves on the trees that make it possible to breathe. With naive mind shield like a helmet, they would tell us that we don't know how we feel or how to connect with other people on the planet. Oh, if we only knew the power in each blue disillusioned little. In the vision of one resides all, destroy the individual, for this is critical. The self ain't everything, hands to grasp, to cling, to mask material vastly shipwrecked beings. At last, release the greed amassed with capitalist tasks and contact the mass communication is all we have in dwindling fast.
Okay, welcome back. Episode 46 of Greener Views. And yes, we did get up, walked around, got into a little bit of the perching position, chit-chatted about the important things, so we're ready to roll. We're back with Larry Swanson from Office Fitness and OfficeFitness.org. And this is the part where we don't talk so much about your business, but I don't think we've been talking exclusively about that by any means, and I've really been enjoying our conversation. This is where we talk about the deep inner workings of Larry and what's going on with you. So please tell us, what is your personal motto or mission statement for you in your life?
That's a good question.
It's a great question.
That's a great question. I think it's learn and share.
Learn and share.
That, if to really summarize it, I'm a lifelong learner, inveterate consumer of information. That's pretty much all I do if I'm not consuming it.
And you're a great sharer too,
I'm jabbering about it. Yeah. So those would be my – yeah, I come from a journalism family. I was actually a journalism major in college, so I'm also trained in doing that. But it's so I guess learning and sharing.
Those David Frost, we were talking about it.
That's right. Yeah. George Plimpton though would be more
George
who
Plimpton,
I would love
wow.
to emulate if I could somehow figure out. I don't know how that's going to happen. Yeah. Yeah.
So who or what has had the greatest impact on your life so far? Doesn't have to be just one thing or person.
Well, you know, in terms of this path, this part of the path, there's a pretty – people look at my career and go, what the heck? Because my first career, I worked in college textbook publishing. I did that for about a dozen years. And then I worked in the dot-com world for several years. And now I've been doing massage for about 14 years. And those actually stitch together quite easily.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, well, it does. Here's what happened. The middle of that publishing career, I was working in New York City, stressful job, stressful time, late 80s in New York City. It was like Fort Apache, the Bronx. Remember that movie? You know, it was like really crazy, scary, you know, mayhem everywhere, graffiti everywhere. This is when all the subways were completely. So it was just, and I was this wide-eyed, naive West Coast kid in the midst of that going, oh, my God. So anyhow, the upshot of all that was my back went out. Totally wrecked my back. A combination of, you know, bad lifestyle habits and stressful jobs, stressful city. And that led to this many years of discovery about medical research and self-care and chiropractic and physical therapy and massage therapy and Tai Chi and all kinds of stuff like that, which culminated years later with me getting into massage school. I thought I was going just as a personal growth thing. I was like, the school I went to was notoriously difficult and kind of brutally character building. And I thought, well, I could use some of that. I'm going to go to the Brian Utting School of Massage and just do this. And I worked my way through massage school at a dot-com startup. And I was doing, you know, search engine optimization, all this fancy internet marketing stuff. And it's like, wow, this is the dawn of the internet. How can I not be doing this? But anyhow, all my massage friends were having so much more fun than I was that I was like, forget the internet. I'm just going to go do massage. And so that was about 2002, about 10 years ago, that I went from a part-time. I'd always done massage part-time for the first couple of years out of school, but I've been doing massage full-time for the last 10 years. So that pathway of back going out, little transition, that's really the dot-com years were the transition. And then that bringing me into my massage career and continuing that same sort of inquiry and about, like, how the heck does this stuff happen? How do backs go out? Like, lower back pain is probably the most common affliction in this country.
Sure.
And it's difficult to say exactly what's going on in any one case. I did a workshop once with Bob King, one of the most famous massage educators in the country. And he rattled off all the possible causes of low back pain. And I was like, wow, that's a lot. You know, it can be disc problems, it can be facet joint problems, it can be muscles, it can be ligaments, tendons, it can be, suppressed infantile rage. There's this whole psychological theory about low back pain. So anyhow, so I've just spent, that's kind of been my story, is like curiosity about these processes and how to help first myself. You know, that was sort of the entree into this whole thing. And then how to help other people out of these situations that arise from, you know, stress, muscle discomfort, all these modern life, wrecking your body. How can we help you undo that? I guess that's that's the underlying curiosity, is about that process. It's what I'm about.
Great. What about a recent book or a movie that's been inspirational to you?
Boy, I'm often criticized by my girlfriend and other people for the, unimaginative reading that I do.
You don't have to worry about that here.
Okay, good. Because I constantly read nonfiction books. Yeah. And I just read, I'm in the middle of one now that's really interesting. Like I said before, as I get into this, the information about what I call office fitness,
sure,
I'm like, this is great, but what good is all this information if you can't actually help people change? So the last book, the book I'm reading now is called Influencer. And I'm just about halfway into it. And it's a really interesting multidisciplinary perspective on how managers and public health people and other people doing mass change, the tools and the methodology that they use. So I'm just about a third of the way into the book. It's really fascinating. There's this whole model of the psychological, the social psychological, and the structural levels of how to make people capable and both willing and able to make change. So that this was recommended by a good friend of mine, and it's totally panning out. So that's the most recent one. But before that, the book I have finished most recently was called The Power of Habit. Mm-hmm. And it's by a New York Times reporter whose name I'm forgetting right now. But he has this really nice model of just very simple model, little circular model of how habits form and how to understand them with that model and how to change them with that model. So again, not particularly exciting. I read a novel about 2 months ago that I loved called The Taste of Salt by a friend of mine named Martha Southgate. And, you know, so I try to keep my brain mixed up a little bit, but 9 out of 10 books I read are books like these, about social psychology, about fitness, about health, that kind of
stuff. I love it. The power of habit is actually very exciting to me. I'm often curious about how, I'm very curious about the memory in general, what the memory is all about, but it's kind of it has me thinking about, how our memories and stuff influence our habits, and then how do we break that down, and how do we potentially
change
that?
Now, we didn't talk – so you couldn't have known this before we started talking.
No, we haven't.
The book before those two – I think it was the last book before those – was called Moonwalking with Einstein.
Okay.
And it's a book about memory, and that particular – the title – refers, I think, to one of the mnemonic devices he uses in the book. But it's all about memory and how to cultivate a better memory. And that kind of – that was for a book group that I was in, I think, is how I happened to read that one. But but it kind of fits into this because you're right. It's about I think habits and memory are related. I can't say exactly how.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, the psychology, the social psychology of – you know, patterns of behavior, memory probably has something to do with that. But anyhow,
we've got a few minutes left. If you figure it all out, spew it out.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, sir.
Well, you know, the Buddhists say it's from past life experience that you have these habits.
And the memories and stuff.
Memories.
Yeah, I would love to do it. Yeah, go ahead.
No, that's a great perspective on that. I love that, Michael, that you could have that's a nice little essay waiting to happen. And that's part of my writing life I hope to develop at some point is just to write a good essay. I write all this kind of, to me, annoyingly how-to-y kind of stuff. I would love to get more poetic and essayist-y about these, you know, sharing this information.
Yeah, I would love to do an entire show on memory and habit, stuff like that. I mean, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So how do you maintain such a hopeful and positive attitude? I know you communicated that in the beginning.
Yeah.
What's the basis for that?
That's a good question.
It's a great question.
Yeah, it's because...
We only ask great questions here on Green Interviews.
That's right. I think there's this little 12-year-old, earnest 12-year-old boy inside of me that just only sees the best in the world. I'm still shocked and disappointed and appalled by human behavior every day. But I still wake up every morning thinking the best of people and the best of my situation and the best of our situation. You know, it'd be easy to be pessimistic about the state of the world and
very,
the future, you know, all kinds of things right now.
Yeah,
but I think, well, and part of it too is that I think I'm also very empirical. There's a lot of good evidence that things are getting better. And that things can get even better. So I think it's partly just sort of naive psychology on my part and evidence from the outside world that, yes, there's every reason to be positive.
Yeah, well, I think it's to me, I believe that we're perpetually on a shift and we have an opportunity to decide which side of that shift that we want to be on.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's about, well, and there you get back to habits.
Yeah.
You know, habits are about making choices about your behavior. And it's a lot of work to cultivate a new habit or to destroy an old habit or mitigate an old habit. But it's worth it, you know, and it's worth trying to stay on the good side of that line.
Yeah. So we talked earlier about some of the stuff, the piece of advice about the office and your fitness and how what's one way we can maintain ourselves that way. How about if we give us one thing that you feel most any single person could do to make a positive impact on the world?
Well, I think that would be to be a model, you know, to recognize that maybe you're not going to be the one person who you're not going to be Gandhi or Martin Luther King or Adolf Hitler, you know, or whoever, you know, so you're going to be a game changer in that way.
Not impossible though.
No, but I love this thing. It's, you know, all this stuff floating around Facebook all the time. There's a great quote lately. It says, I can't remember the exact
quote. My Facebook status says game changer.
Oh. But there's this something about, you know, never underestimate the power of like, or you can't really say that a small thing can't have influence until you've spent the night in a tent with a mosquito.
There you go.
You know, so be a mosquito. That would be my advice to people.
Yeah. Great. So that's so heavy that I'm not even sure how to comprehend that one. So how can listeners get the word out about Office Fitness? Give us your, let's see, email address. We're talking about Facebook here, mm-hmm. website, phone number. How do people get a hold of you?
I have a Facebook page, but yeah. I rarely use that. I try to tweet regularly, but it's my massage practice is still my top priority, and I've been really busy the last couple of weeks, so I haven't tweeted much at all.
Well, we've done 45 episodes of this show previously, and has anybody actually given their tweet address? I don't even know what you call it. Maybe a couple.
You just use the at symbol, so I'm just at Office Fitness.
That's a good one.
So that's one way to follow me, and the website is officefitness.org. And you'd asked about that earlier.
Part of
it is that officefitness.com was taken. But also
– and what about .net?
But I didn't – so but for me, .org implies like nonprofit. And there, I don't know if you know, there's this new business entity, the B Corp.
Okay.
The kind of the do-gooder. It's kind of halfway between nonprofit and for-profit.
Okay.
It's this idea that like, yeah, you can – I don't understand exactly the distinctions you need to make in your business decisions about it. But anyhow, and that I associate with the .org. And also there's a local SEO consulting and software firm called SEO Moz .org. And Rand Fishkin is one of my role models for a lot of stuff. But he intentionally chose .org for that outfit because he thought it sounded more – it's more community and more – I think you would expect and hope for more objective and helpful and non-commercial interface. You know, .com kind of implies a commercial thing, whereas .org implies more of a nonprofit thing. So for all those reasons.
Officefitness.org. And is it Larry at officefitness.org?
Yeah, just Larry at
officefitness.org. Okay.
Yeah,
and then what about a phone number?
206-624-6255. And that's my massage practice. That the voicemail there will ask you if you want an appointment or anything. But that's where I take all my calls.
Great. Mm-hmm. And we don't generally. It's kind of hard to pinpoint since we're talking about nonprofit. It takes us sometimes a week or so to get the show out. Mm-hmm. But is there something in the somewhat near future, but not too distant future? Any kind of upcoming events or activities that you'd like to get the word out about?
I'm doing – and what's today? Today's the 10th, so the 20th will be the next one. I'm doing on the third Thursday of each month from between now and the end of the year, I'm doing a free office fitness talk at in the Medical Dental Building. That's where my practice is, downtown at 5th and Olive. And I think the next one is on – I know the next one is on ergonomic self-assessment. So that'll be a week from Thursday, September 20th will be the next one. The October one I think is more fit at work. The November one, I think, is on stress, kind of tying in with the holidays. Anyhow, so the third Thursday.
Office fitness related stuff.
Office fitness. And so you can go to Eventbrite to register for those or just show up.
Get the momentum going. We got the first Thursdays. We got the art thing.
Third Thursday. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say we have the first Thursdays down there, but we'll get the third Thursday the momentum going too.
That's right.
With office fitness chat. I love it.
And there's information about that on the website. So
super. Yeah. Well, is there any sage-like last words or words of wisdom or something that you'd like to take us out with?
Get up, get off your butt, get moving. It'll save your life.
Great.
Be a mosquito.
Be a mosquito.
Be a mosquito.
Thanks, Michael.
But don't bite anybody. Never mind. Okay, great. Well, listen, thank you so much.
Thank you, Dick.
You've been listening to Larry Swanson from officefitness.org. This has been episode 46 of Greener Views. And on behalf of myself and Randy and Michael, thank you. You can contact us at 206-650-4587. You can email us info@greenerviews.net if you'd like to advertise or sponsor or donate or send feedback if you have any ideas about guests or topics. Please check out AmbrosiaDigitalMedia.com and healthyhomecast.com. So let's see. That's it. We'll see you next time. Have a great night. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
You've got to wave.
Got to wave. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. You've got it. Whether you like it or not. Bye-bye. I know he likes it.
I do.
Thank you for listening. Greener Views is part of the Healthy Homecast Network. Check out all their conscientious and sustainably focused podcast programs and businesses at healthyhomecast.com. Greener Views is created, developed, and produced by Daryl Whalen. Our audio engineer is Randy Parcell. Our video producer is Michael Schwartz of AmbrosiaDigitalMedia.com. Music for this episode was provided by SlapJazz.com, DanFajans.Bandcamp.com, and JDHobson.com. Your feedback is important. Please feel free to contact us with any comments or questions, including suggestions for guests and program topics. You can call us at 206-650-4587 or send a direct email to info@greenerviews.net. Be sure to check back often. New episodes coming soon.